Massey, a master of organization, emphasized the quality and welfare of our people. He and I interviewed all the team leaders. We knew they would be the key to success. The operational teams consisted of a team chief, a veteran operations officer with the requisite experience in languages, and a deputy chief, usually a paramilitary officer from SAD. Each team included a communications, COMO, officer, a medic, and one or two tactical experts. Often a case officer with unique counterterrorism and language skills would be included. No team numbered more than 8. For fighting, these guys were old. The average age was well over 40. Gary Schroen, the team leader of Jawbreaker already in the Panjshir Valley, turned 60 while on deployment. But their mission was not combat, although there was some of that, but rather intelligence collection and covert action leadership. Our selection criteria, therefore, focused on hard counterterrorism experience and a proven ability to lead. The team leaders, therefore, were senior in rank. Most were the military equivalent of a colonel. Schroen was a CIA version of a 3-star general leading a commando team. In the U.S. military, that would be impossible, inconceivable. By design, the team leaders would make operational decisions on the fly. We emphasized a field bias, stressing unrelenting pursuit of the enemy. My mission was to forge the strategy, support the teams with everything from policy guidance to horse feed. The team leaders, I demanded, must make the operational decisions. I wanted fast, precise, dynamic decision-making on the battlefield. I wanted experienced but unconventional leadership. I wanted the CIA elite, the 1 in 100. One team leader, a former Army officer and veteran CIA operative who spoke Farsi, Persian, and Dari, Afghan dialects of Persian, was an expert on Afghanistan. A tall, strapping fellow, an anthropologist by academic training, he asked me about his mission. I walked over to a map, pointed to 5 provinces in the northern part of the country. "This is yours. You will be dropped south of Mazar. Drive north, capture Mazar, and keep going north to the Uzbekistan border. We need access to the Friendship Bridge that connects Afghanistan to the rest of Central Asia. That will give us an overland supply route. Other teams will cut the road south to Kabul at the Salang Tunnel, so that will isolate the remaining enemy in a pocket here at Kunduz. Schroen has already deployed a couple of guys up in the north on the high ground east of Kunduz. Our Afghan allies will sweep from there down the mountain and along the Amu Darya River plain, linking with your forces to the north and south of Kunduz, closing the ring. In 1997, our Afghan allies trapped the Taliban in this very spot in the same way, but could not finish the job. This time we will." "Yes, sir," he responded. All the pundits, including some in CIA HQS, kept harping on the British catastrophe in 1842 and the Soviets' ignominious retreat in 1989. But we were not going to invade. We were supporting and empowering a divided, weak insurgency. Therefore, local, recent, tribal military history applied, not lessons of imperial invasion. "And try to keep our Afghan friends from killing each other," I added. His team would be dealing with a trio of commanders: Abdul Rashid Dostum, an Uzbek, Mohammad Mohaqiq, a Hazara Shia, and Ustad Atta Mohammad, a Tajik. They commanded separate cohorts of tribal warriors fighting together in a brittle alliance. Each team leader, with only a few men under his direct command, understood that our objective was to forge an Afghan victory over the foreign invaders, the Arabs, Chechens, Pakistanis, and others who formed AQ's ranks, and it hijacked the Taliban government for their own ends. This was critical to success. Afghans must view AQ as the foreign interloper, not us. We had to convince Afghans of our joint cause against these foreign enemies. We had to help our Afghan allies recruit, encourage, and lead other Afghan tribal leaders to our side. I looked at the team leader. He was one of our few true Afghan experts. He had maintained contact with Afghan friends for years. He loved them and the country. He, his team, and the other teams would serve as intelligence collectors, covert action operatives, political advisors, mediators, and paramilitary commanders. These team leaders would be the catalyst for the campaign. It all rested on them. Collect intelligence, work closely with our military, and support and guide our Afghan allies. Recruit more Afghan allies. We need a heap more men under arms. We need to recruit armies. Destroy Al-Qaeda. Subvert the Taliban. If those assholes want to join us in pursuit of our enemy, Al-Qaeda, fine. If not, that's their mistake. When do the special forces join us? He asked. I have no idea. They will catch up when they can. We need them, but we cannot wait for them. We cannot wait for anybody. For all we know, AQ could launch another attack, even bigger than 9/11, in our homeland tomorrow. We cannot wait. Questions? No, sir. Okay, then. Team Alpha is yours. Good luck. This exchange was typical. In a few minutes, we provided the team leaders strategic mission orders. They had to figure out the rest and execute from minute to minute. Sitting in CIA headquarters 6,000 miles away, we could not. Later, as I did several times a day, I studied our maps. The physical geography, spectacular and daunting, could be overwhelming if viewed as a barrier. If seen through the eyes of an insurgency, which we were, it offered great advantage. The acute topographic relief and the geo-coordinates of our allies, both confirmed and prospective, determined our geographic strategy. We would drop our teams where our Afghan allies had carved out sufficient semi-secure areas of operation. Simple, because there were no other viable sites for our men to land. Our teams would link with tribal leaders. We were already in contact with most of them. Team Jawbreaker was already in the Panjshir. Working with General Mohammed Fahim, the combined Allied forces would attack from their stronghold in the Panjshir Valley that opened to the northern hills bordering the Somali plains. They would blast across these plains to Kabul. They would cut the road from Kabul to Kunduz, and they would launch from their mountain redoubts farther north and advance towards the towns of Talikan and Kunduz. Team Alpha, which would grow and evolve into Alpha and Bravo teams, would deploy south of Mazar and advance north. Team Charlie would link with Ismail Khan and his forces. They would attack from their base in central western Afghanistan, aiming for Herat, farther west, near the Iranian border. They would cut the ring road north and south of Herat. This intervention would prevent any Taliban reinforcements from reaching the north. Team Delta would drop into Bamiyan province in the center of Afghanistan to the west of Kabul. Hazara Shia leader Karim Khalili was especially eager for our team to arrive. The Taliban had mercilessly persecuted the Hazara, and they were desperate for our help. Our strategy in the northern half of Afghanistan, designed to reinforce the military inclinations of our Afghan allies, seemed to be our only choice if we wanted to hit back with speed. Fahim wanted Kabul, Dostum Mazar-e-Sharif, Khan Herat, Khalili Bamiyan. Our job was to support them while weaving their individual objectives into a coherent, synchronized campaign, and to do all this while pursuing our number one priority, the destruction of Al-Qaeda. Our mandate from the president was clear. Our Afghan campaign was a means to an end, to defend the United States by destroying AQ. Our growing Afghan alliance was the most effective, most immediate way to achieve this object. The foundation for the alliance was simple. The CIA wanted AQ. Our Afghan allies wanted their country back. The formulation and execution of the plan, however, were exceedingly complex. Afghanistan was less a nation-state than a land of constantly shifting tribal alliances that almost defied understanding, much less coordinating and leading. Instead of one entry point, there were many scattered all over the country in every tribe and stratum of society. This was especially true for the southern part of Afghanistan, the homeland of the Taliban. Some in the CIA had taken the side of Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence, ISI, hoping to push for some deal with the Taliban. Tenet wanted to give the Pakistanis some time to address the southern question. I objected, but was overruled. I knew the Pakistanis could not fix this. It wasn't in their interests. They had created the Taliban. Pakistani leaders wanted a pliable Afghanistan that afforded them strategic depth against India. Pakistan is a narrow country, and an Indian blitzkrieg across the Punjab plain was an existential threat to our Pakistani allies.